That's the end of the first half. As the teams head to the locker room, the Spartans lead the Bulldogs by a score.
You guys stink.
Jeez, Coach, we're only down a couple of points.
No, I mean you guys really smell. You need to hit the showers. And here, I got every one of you new bars of soap from the Sterling Soap Company. Each bar is artisan crafted using natural ingredients and essential oils. They also have shave soaps, colognes, beard balm, and a whole lot more. Now get in there.
But Coach, we have another half to play.
I don't care. I can't stand to be around you.
A few minutes later.
All right, bring it in tight. You guys are still playing terrible, but you're smelling great out there. Now listen, you're going to need to stock up for the rest of the season. We got a lot of tough games left. So go to sterlingsoap.com after the game. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com. You got that?
Yes, Coach.
Great. sterlingsoap.com on three. One, two, three.
sterlingsoap.com.
He ends up becoming, he's the first Asian and the first Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander player in NFL history.
That's a tremendously big statement in football history from our guest, Timothy B. Brown, who joins us today, who's going to reveal this secret and more about the great Asians and Polynesian players in football history, coming up in just a moment.
Check it out, Pigskin Dispatch video. Yeah, woohoo!
You know, in the modern game of football, we have a lot of folks that are really good at playing football from the Polynesian nationality. And, you know, people like Troy Polamalu and Puka Nacua and others, you know, they're running rampant in the NFL and doing quite well. Well, Tim Brown joins us today to talk about the first of these Polynesian folks that played the game of football. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren, good to chat with you. Yeah, looking forward to covering this. I think it's, not well covered, especially the history of some of these fellows.
Yeah, I mean, Marcus Mariota and Troy Polamalu, and you know, these guys are like fun to watch. They're fun players. They're great players, making some great plays. But there's a tradition of these folks from the islands playing the game of football that I never knew till I read your recent tidbit on this that you have titled Pioneering Asian and Pacific Islander Football Players. And what can you tell us about these folks, Tim?
Yeah, well, you know, kind of like you said, I mean, not that it's been researched enough, but, you know, there has been research and just general awareness, obviously, of the role of African-Americans, black players in football, you know, and just like in other sports and society more generally, they were, you know, held back, banned, you know, there was segregation, yada, yada. And then that all really started changing in the 1960s. That's when it really started changing. But, you know, there was also, you had the Carlisle and the Native American schools or Indian schools, you know, we had, you know, and so those are kind of groups that were kind of, you know, there's maybe it's awareness of some of their issues, but there's also, there's been some groups like, you know, there's out there, the Jewish Hall of Fame, Athletic Hall of Fame. Now, obviously that's, sometimes people consider it nationality or ethnic group, but anyways, I'm not going to get into that, but there's been the Polish American Halls of Fame, you know, mm-hmm. So there's been different groups where, you know, they've celebrated their culture and their athletic, you know, prowess. But anyways, I was thinking about that, and it was like, I don't remember seeing anything about Asian and Pacific Islanders. So I just decided to start looking into it. So anyways, it's not necessarily the easiest thing to find, but so it took a lot of, you know, just digging. But, you know, what I ended up finding was that there, a lot of the early, I was focused on college football, right? So a lot of the early college football players who were Asian and not Pacific Islanders initially, a lot of them were actually foreign nationals. You know, they were like their dad was some kind of big, government official or military officer, or just somebody who was rich in China or Japan. Right. And so they sent their, you know, there's a big move, especially in Japan, you know, late 1800s to send their children to Europe and to the U.S. for education, right? And to bring, you know, modern technology back, yada, yada. So So a lot of the early Asian players were fo actually foreign nationals who maybe were just good athletes. And there was one guy like at Penn who was played on their base, the varsity baseball player. He was one of the best tennis players around at the time. And he's anyways, but so they were good athletes or just wanted to become acculturated, and so they joined the football team. And that was back when most of the football teams, even at the top schools, they were just walk-ons, Yeah, they recruited some big stars here and there, but most of the guys were just, it's whoever showed up. So, and I compared it. It's like the foreign exchange student. You say, okay, let me try this. And then some of them just were talented enough that they got some playing time. So, but initially it was just, that was kind of the, what you saw. And especially that was the case in Eastern schools, because there just wasn't much in the US, there just wasn't much of an Asian population on the East Coast. Asians first showed up on the West Coast, for kind of obvious, geographic reasons. And so then what you started seeing was some players of Asian descent who were like first generation kids living in California, especially, who started playing high, they're playing high school ball just like anybody else. And so then they end up playing at Cal or Stanford or, wherever. And I did not find anybody before the 20s who was identified as a Pacific Islander, which is actually a little bit odd, but because Hawaii became and still produces a lot of really talented football players, but Hawaii has a long tradition of football, and it's because of the U.S. military presence there. I mean, it was a territory, not a state. But the soldiers and sailors are playing football, and so they started too, and they've had this long tradition of barefoot football. And so then some of them started playing, they're playing that in high school, and eventually St. Louis School, it was then St. Louis College, I think, but anyways, it's a Catholic school in Honolulu that still produces, some of the guys you mentioned played there. They produce a lot of really talented players. And so there was this guy named Walter, I think it's actually a Chiu, so Achiu. And he ends up going to Dayton. It's like, okay, well, why would somebody from Honolulu go to Dayton? And it turns out that both of them, the St. Louis School and then Dayton are run by the same Catholic order. And so that is probably the reason he went there. And then three of his classmates who are a year behind him end up going there the following year. And so then he ends up become, he becomes a star. He's a really good athlete, faster than anything. And so he ends up captaining the track team too, but he was a running back, mostly halfback, played quarterback for him. And but like all through his college career, and at the time Dayton was probably playing, maybe a little bit better than small college, but most of their, that's basically the level that they were playing. And he was like, people would write him up in the newspaper. They always mentioned, it was just like they used to do the same thing. Like if there was a colored player, or a Negro player, they'd always mention his race, and they did the same thing with him. He's just, they'd call him Chinese, whether the, or Native Islander, because his father was Chinese from China and his mother was a, Native Hawaiian. So anyway, so they'd always build like his race was half of his football identity. I mean, not that he made it so, but that's the way the press reported it. So anyways, he graduates, got an electrical engineering degree from Dayton, and he coached, well, he was a trainer, but any coach trainer, is because he stayed an extra year. But then that same year, he's also playing semi-pro ball and then starts playing for the Dayton Triangles, who were in the NFL. So he ends up becoming, he's the first Asian and the first Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander player in the NFL history.
And Dayton Triangles played in the first NFL game where two NFL teams played each other, that APFA. So yeah, I don't know if he was in 1920 and on the team, but he might have played that game.
He was in 26.
26, okay.
Yeah. So he ends up, my sense is that he was like, he started probably half the time that he was in the NFL. And the Triangles during his era, they weren't a very good team. They only won like three games the time he was there. But then like the NFL teams would promote, you know, like if you read the Green Bay Press Gazette, whenever the Triangles were coming to town, they'd always talk about this, you know, Sneeze. And I don't think I really built that up, but because his last name was Achui.
I almost told you God bless you the first time you said it, but said I'll withhold that.
But apparently, like, people had trouble pronouncing his name, so he would tell them it's just like a Sneeze, a Chewy. Anyways, and again, I may not have the pronunciation exactly right, or at least the way it would be pronounced by a native. But anyways, so he ends up playing in the 26th season and the 27th season, plays, you know, all season four. And then what's funny is that I kind of came across, I'd heard of him, but hadn't paid much attention to him until I came across this broadside or poster that was released about an upcoming Chicago Bears Dayton Triangles game from 1928. And he's listed there on the, they show two players or the named two players. One is a guy named Britton who was a fullback for Red Grange in Illinois. And so, okay, that makes sense. Chicago Bears and everything. And then the other guy is a Chewy. And so, but what's funny about the story is that by the time, so they were promoting a game like, you know, November 20th or something like that. But he had left the Triangles to go play for, what was then a semi-pro team. And so he wasn't even on the team by the time that post, well, but he had left the, he was off the Triangles for like 3 weeks before that poster came out. So it's just kind of funny because it was still like, okay, well, we still got to promote, you know, this guy because he's like an attraction. He's like a novelty, right? And so anyways, so then he, once he retires from football, he was a pro wrestler for into the 50s. And I've never figured out if like pro wrestling back then, was it like, you know, how the NFL players had day jobs, like, you know, this guy's an electrical engineer, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I know, you know, there's coverage saying that he started in that career. So was he doing that during the day and then wrestling at night, or I'm not sure how, you know, just how that worked. Cause that's
I,
what
I know,
you
know, like Bronco Nagurski did both. And,
all
he
of them.
He ended up quitting football because he was making more money wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he was at Broncos level in terms of the wrestling thing, but you know, all those guys had day jobs, right? I mean, so anyways, so it's just an interesting story, and it's just kind of at the time, the novelty of a guy being Chinese or Japanese or Pacific Islander was like, you know, that was the story, not necessarily his athletic play, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting when you say, you know, that he went to Dayton, you know, how could somebody from Hawaii go to Dayton? It immediately made me think of like Nick Herbig, and I believe his brother Nate too. They came from Hawaii and played at Wisconsin. Your Wisconsin team, which is even colder climate, you know, that's just crazy. It's I would never think that. I'd always think of like us in the colder regions wanting to go play in Florida or Hawaii or Southern California or something, but never the other way.
Herbig's brother, I forget where he played. He didn't play at Wisconsin.
Oh, he didn't play it in Wisconsin. Okay,
yeah,
I thought he did.
I can't remember right now, you know, where he played, but yeah. Yeah, so I mean, here and there you get like one of the Raiola brothers was, you know, they're from Hawaii too. And so one of them played at Wisconsin, and his older brother had played at Nebraska. So anyways. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And, you know, I mean, a lot of the And then, Samoans too, especially have, really become prominent. I mean, they've, I think, generally tended to be stayed on the West Coast, but it's like go wherever whatever works for you, man.
Right.
That's the way to do it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Tim, you never cease to amaze me. The ends you go to find some football history. You talk about the gadgets and rules and legendary players, but now you're going culturally and talking about some people that don't get enough credit in the history of the game of football. And I appreciate that you do that, and I'm sure the listeners do, and your readers do as well. But you do this. You cover a lot of gambits of the game of football in your tidbits. And maybe you could share with folks where they can catch on to some of these.
Sure. Just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site. You can either subscribe or follow. If you subscribe, you'll get an email every time I publish a new article. Or just, bookmark it, visit whenever you want to. And just how wh whatever kind of floats your boat, however you want to consume the information. And I've got like 1,400 articles out there now. So, there's a lot of stuff that, if you're looking for a question on football history, just use a little search function and there's a good chance I've covered it or something like it. So,
Yeah, amazing stuff as always, and we appreciate it. And yeah, folks, make sure you take advantage of that using that search function and finding any question you have. Tim's probably got it there somewhere, or if not, send him an email or something, so I'm sure he'll research it for you because he loves doing that. But we love having you here on Tuesdays, and we'd love to talk to you again next week.
good. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Sports History Network, where legends live on and the past plays loud.
Welcome to the place where history's proud, from gridiron glory to the hardwood stars, from the racetrack heat to Olympic bars. It's the voices, the stories, the moments you miss, told by fans and pros who live for this. Hook and Famic, the Sports History Network, where the past comes alive, podcasts and blogs that keep the flame high. From Babe to Brady, Alley to the Dome, if it's history and sports, then this is the home. SportsHistoryNetwork.com, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.